everybody, and welcome to another edition of the World Football Index South American Football Show. Tonight we're going to take a bit of a look back at the first leg of the second phase of the Copa Libertadores, and I believe we're going to take a very quick look at Chile and Colombia, where the leagues have started. Fine panel with me this evening in the form of the just-arrived Austin Miller. Austin, how are you? Since I haven't talked to you for the last 2 hours, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing quite well. Late arrival for me on the call, but you all were kind enough to wait around. So I'm here, excited. You know, Libertadores in all of its glory is back. I don't know how I feel about all these phases before we even get to the group stage, but I mean, I guess it's more football, so that's not necessarily a bad thing. But getting all these phases and legs and everything confused, I just want to get to the group stages.
I think you and I'll have a chat about the Montevideo Wanderers goalkeeper. I missed last week, and I'm very concerned about this man.
They replaced him. He was so poor, they pulled him. They made one change to their starting 11, and it was the goalkeeper.
Yeah, and let's face it, the replacement wasn't much better. Maybe it's an area they could develop. But next up in Chile, we have, as always, Adam Brandon. Good evening, Adam. I know how you are, but tell the listeners how you are.
I'm good, thanks, Dave. Sweating quite a bit, even though it's approaching 1 a.m. here. But you know how it is, South America this time of year, nice, hot and sweaty.
Yes, it's hot and shitty here as well. As always, it is summer. And last but not least, up in Medellin in Colombia, we have Simon Edwards. Simon, how are you this evening?
Yeah, I'm good. It's not too warm at the moment down here, up here. It's nice. Been quite dry recently, so it's good to have a bit of a prolonged spell of sunshine. That's why I'm down here, part of the reason. So it's nice to have some nice weather. But it's comfortable right now. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good down here in Medellin.
Well, listen, let's not linger. Let's get straight on into it. And we'll start off with the first game, which basically was the Tuesday game, which was Cerro against Union Española. Who watched this?
Well, with it involving a Chilean side, I obviously had a keen eye on this one. Union Española, I had hopes that they would get through over the two legs, but I think that, you know, after this first leg, they're almost there. They came out with a 3-2 victory. They were the better side over the 90 minutes as well. Their front two, Diego Churin and Carlos Salom, caused the Uruguayans all kinds of problems throughout the 90 minutes. Salom, especially with his pace, was a threat all game. Even though he won the Man of the Match award, I thought he was a bit fortunate to win it because he got in some great positions by using, you know, his attributes like his pace and stuff. But he did waste so many opportunities. And really, Cerro shouldn't have got so close to getting a result out of this match. Union Española had the chance to bury the game when they were 2-1 up. In the end, it looked like it was going to finish 2-2 until the new signing that I mentioned on last week's podcast, Sebastián Jaime. He's back at the club where he's really succeeded in the past. And he came up with the goods with just a couple of minutes to go. A brilliant chip over the goalkeeper, a lob over the goalkeeper, to give Union Española a 3-2 lead heading into the second leg. They've also got a couple of players coming back from international duty for that one. Jose Luis Sierra, who scored for Chile in the under-20 South American Championships, which we've also covered here on the World Football Index. He's going to be available and he'll be a good option from the bench to replace one of the front three of Churin, Salom or Jaime. So, yeah, Union Española in a really great position going into the second leg. And I'm pretty confident that they will go through. Their opposition, the Uruguayans, Cerro, I thought they battled well, even if they were a little bit dirty at times. But it was quite obvious they were quite a limited side technically. And they really were, their main threat came from set pieces.
No, you'd mentioned that, you know, we talked about this pre-pod, Adam, that, you know, it takes a little while to get your head readjusted back into Copa Libertadores and maybe some of the challenges that we see in the tournament and what we get away with in the tournament down here.
Yeah, for sure. In both the games against the Chilean sides, I was calling for a red card against the opposition within about the first 10 minutes. But then I remembered that I was watching Libertadores football and, you know, it probably takes about three of those types of challenges before a red card is produced. So yeah, that's definitely something we're gonna have to adjust our minds to once again.
No, with that, but it's a good adjustment. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy that sort of football with an edge. Okay, so we'll move forward then on into the next game, which was Carabobo against Junior. Junior coming out 1-0 winners away from home. Simon, your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, it was a good win for Junior. I think Carabobo were fairly weak. It was on an artificial pitch, which did make a big difference. It was very frantic. Carabobo covered a lot of ground, pressured a lot of energy, but without a great deal of quality. The goal for Junior was a very good goal. Robinson Aponza, who's been playing in Peru with Alianza Atletico. He scored 34 goals in Peru over the last year and a half. So he's had a good record there. Before that, he was knocking about different Colombian teams without really making an impact. But in the last two or three years, he's really come together and scored an excellent goal from long range. So yeah, I think Junior will be satisfied. Towards the end of the game, they were holding out for the 1-0 win, which is obviously a very good result away from home. They will obviously expect to go through in the second leg. The team looked good. I like Hernandez, he's a good player. They signed Jonathan Estrada, who's a very good creative attacking midfielder as well, where he can play deeper, but he's a good creative force in the midfield. I'm not so sure about Ovelar up front. I'd prefer Michael Rangel. Ovelar obviously is a bit more experienced, but I think Rangel is a very good target man. He scored the goal of the year last season. He's had an interesting career. He's been very highly regarded at points and dropped off at other points, but I'd quite like to see him back in the team. But yeah, Junior should be very happy with the result. They got the 1-0 win away. They will expect to go through at home. I can't really see Carabobo scoring many goals. I don't expect them to outplay Junior particularly in the next leg, but again, they're very frantic. They're hardworking. If things break their way, they could get a goal and make things interesting. But I think in terms of quality, I would expect Junior to progress after getting this good result in the first leg.
Yeah, I think Simon's pretty spot on here. I think Junior maybe could have even scored another one here. I think the artificial pitch and just kind of all of that made it just a 1-0 game. But this certainly feels like a tie that when they go to the second leg and when they get back to Colombia, I really can't see Carabobo being able to not only get a goal, but then even get another one to get back in it. Really, I think they'll probably concede a couple as well. The way to win this tie for Carabobo was to maybe get a lead and then sit back and try to defend on the road, and they weren't able to do that. So this really feels like kind of an easy second leg for Junior. They've got the lead, and they've got a Carabobo side that really probably shouldn't scare them as far as the attacking is concerned.
Tell me this, you Spanish speakers. What's the thought process behind the name Carabobo? Now, if I translate that in Portuguese, it comes out silly face or stupid face. What's the, you know, just useless facts of the Copa Libertadores pod? Anybody know why?
No, and I've looked this up because I mentioned this on a pod a few weeks ago, but the name just cracks me up every time I see it. But yeah, it's a really complicated kind of historical reason why it is, and it's nothing to do with if you split those names up individually. Cara, which means face in Spanish, and Bobo, which is means silly, kind of a slang for silly in Latin America. But yeah, it is a weird reason. I can't even remember why.
Okay, so let's move along to the next game then, which was a 2-2 draw against Atletico Tucumán and El Nacional. Austin, I believe you saw this one. As I say, thankfully, this is the last one that I didn't see. So what happened here?
Yeah, this was, firstly, credit Tucumán, who I believe were making their continental debut in this match. So a new team here in the Copa Libertadores. I thought the environment was phenomenal. I thought the fans created a fantastic atmosphere for them. And early on, Tucumán made them pretty happy with it. A second-minute goal from Tucumán got them out to the lead. And it almost felt like they could have had another one as that first half went along. Then El Nacional kind of found their footing. They got a goal before halftime to make it 1-1. Then in that second half, Tucumán got another goal to go up 2-1, and it kind of felt like they were going to hold that. And then once again, El Nacional now popped back to draw this at 2-2. De Jesus coming off the bench for them. He's a big, lanky striker that I was really kind of impressed with his positioning and his physicality. He created that second goal with a bit of hold-up play and then finished it himself. And that got El Nacional back 2-2. And I think that's a really, really positive result for the Ecuadorians, because it looked like for a minute or two, that they might get run out early on in this match and Tucumán was going to put a couple goals past them. They were able to hold on, battle back for a draw. And being a Quito's side, they're going to be able to go back to this second leg, and it's going to be played at altitude for them, which is going to be a massive, massive advantage. And especially with a team like Tucumán, you know, I think a couple South American teams, granted, any team going and playing at altitude is going to be difficult, but there's at least some teams that have the experience of having done it before. So you have that drama to grow on, you know, that experience that you've played at this altitude, so you know what that experience is going to be like and that feeling and those sensations. Tucumán aren't going to have that. They don't really have anybody that is really experienced Libertadores-wise. And so because of that, you know, they're going to have to go to altitude at already. You know, the match starts 0-0 and you're already heading out if that stays the result. So they're going to need to score. So I think El Nacional should be favored to take this second leg. And they did well to battle back twice in this first leg and get it to 2-2.
Yeah, I totally agree, Austin. I thought the Ecuadorians did brilliantly to get a comeback from this. And I joked on Twitter that their style was a bit too much like Stoke City in 2008 for my liking.
The long throw-in, yeah.
The long
playing
throw.
Rugby, no?
There was a long throw specialist on their team. They had various tall players in the area and one managed to get his head onto it. It was actually scarily similar to a goal I remember Norwich conceding against Stoke in 2008. Delap Sidibe special. If our listeners know those two names from Premier League Stoke City days, imagine the typical goal they used to score, and that was the second equaliser El Nacional got in this game. What I loved about this tie was the proper Libertadores atmosphere. It was Tucumán's first ever game in the competition, and the reception they got in the stadium made it feel almost like a final. There was fireworks going off when they came onto the pitch. It was a real fervent atmosphere in the stands. There was a great shot at one point. I can't remember the scoreline in the game at the time, but this game was quite end-to-end at times. And there was a shot in the crowd of like a father with his son. And it looked like the father was about to have a heart attack. He was caught up in the emotions of the game. But yeah, this was a typically brilliant Libertadores clash for me, and one of the games I enjoyed most this week. And I think it set up nicely for the second leg. I wonder, without the emotion of the home crowd and that first ever Libertadores match, we'll maybe see kind of a more composed performance from the Argentines in the second leg. Although I kind of side with Austin that you have to make El Nacional slight favourites for it, given they have home advantage.
At altitude.
I think I could really see Tucumán maybe putting in 55 to 60 minutes in this match. And then, yes, I know it's in Quito, but to steal a turn, they're going to get La Paz. And you can just see their movements get slow. And I think of all of the teams to have that altitude effect, I feel like there's going to be a big effect here on Tucumán in this one.
I'm going to ask Oxford English Dictionary if they can add the term La Paz to their dictionary this year. I'm quite proud.
We're keeping on WFI. It's a WFI phrase from here on. But listen, let's move forward into, and to be honest with you, another really good atmosphere, and a surprisingly good atmosphere from Botafogo and Colo Colo. This one ended 2-1 to Botafogo. On first look, Adam, you know, I know we spoke about this and we spoke about it afterwards, and I felt that Botafogo, you know, so the first goal was great, but on a few more views and having watched the game twice, I think Colo Colo were absolutely robbed in this game and should have come out of it at least with parity. I just think they're favourites for the second leg. What was your thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, maybe I'm a bit biased from kind of a Chilean perspective, but Colo Colo's second half performance was the best I saw from any side this week, especially if you take into the difficulty of the opposition into the equation and things like that.
There was a big crowd in Rio, and they were loud, Adam, you know, so I think they did exceptionally well.
Well, you could tell at 2-0 that they thought that this was going to, it was all wrapped up, it was going to be easy. And they were a bit shell-shocked in the second half, I think, at kind of the charge that Colo-Colo put together. They really should have got that second away goal. I think to start this game, I think the manager, who, you know, I'm a fan of him, but he does make some big mistakes sometimes in big games. It's But I love his style of play, Pablo Guardi, and I think it paid off for him this time, because although he got his selections wrong to start with, and I think possibly he got the first half substitution wrong because Aldivia, he had to go off with an injury, which he unfortunately it's knee ligament damage, so he's going to be out for a few months. His replacement, Gonzalo Fierro, who is a legend with Colo-Colo, he's been there over a decade, but he's not a player who I particularly rate these days. I think he can be a liability, and he was at fault for the second goal. He did play a role in Colo-Colo's comeback, as did the two subs Guardi made at half-time. The introduction of Pedro Morales was certainly key. I think he gave Colo-Colo control of the midfield, and it was his pass which set up another substitute, Christopher Gonzalez, to set up the legendary striker Esteban Paredes for Colo-Colo's goal, which got them back into this tie. Paredes has actually scored 9 of the last 10 Colo-Colo goals in this competition, which shows you his importance to this side. It was really interesting to see him kind of once again be the talisman for this side, because we've seen it Libertadores after Libertadores, him come up with the goods and his teammates haven't gone with him. But I think with this style of play that Guardi's got, I think he has got a better team around him this time, and a good philosophy and a nice way of playing. And I think it will be a real positive if Colo-Colo stayed in the competition. From what I've seen so far, they're the most interesting side tactically in this competition. And I think it will be a real shame if they were to go out. But I'm confident they can turn it around in this second leg. I didn't think too much of Botafogo, to be honest. I thought they looked quite limited, in fact. And they did well to get into a 2-goal lead. Their second goal especially was very fortunate.
Comedy Channel.
Yeah.
But not the most crazy one. There's still something much more crazy to come in terms of goals. Austin, for you, you know, Botafogo, you know, bit of a yo-yo club in Brazil, and find themselves in the Libertadores. They find themselves fortuitously maybe 2-0 ahead, but I just don't fancy them for the second leg. What's your thoughts?
I think you guys hit this really spot on. Botafogo had an opportunity to maybe put this tie to bed, and they couldn't do it. And they allowed Colo-Colo back in it. And now, even with that 2-1 lead, I'm with both of you. I don't think they're the favorites going forward. You look at the two goals for Botafogo. You have one really well taken, an individual play from Ayrton that got them ahead first. In truth, it was a very good volley to beat the keeper and score. And then they were the beneficiaries of a mix-up at the back for Colo-Colo, and boom, they're 2-0 up. And as Adam said, you know, give the Colo-Colo manager credit. He made all of his substitutions by the end of halftime. And that's a very bold thing to do, to have all three of your changes already used up by halftime. But, you know, he said, this is not working, and this is our way back in the tie, and it worked for them. They got the goal, and they were probably maybe even unfortunate, as you said, to not get this to 2-2. I agree with Adam that Botafogo just kind of felt limited. I wasn't terribly impressed with Walter Montillo back in the midfield. He had moved to Botafogo this transfer window. Botafogo left off their leading goal scorer from last year, Sasa. He was not on their roster for this, and the rumors now is that they've come to an agreement with a Chinese club, so he will be off there. There had been some off-the-pitch issues for him during his limited time off here in December and January, and Holger didn't do a ton stepping into that role. Botafogo feel like they're poised to take a 2-3-0 defeat on the road here. They don't have their stalwart center back, Joel Carli. He was out for this first leg. He's probably going to be out for the second leg as well. Botafogo are going to come into this second leg with the wrong mindset. And I like Jair Ventura, their manager, but the second half, Botafogo just didn't bring anything to the table, and they were on the back foot and were fortunate to even win 2-1. And we'll get into this a bit with Paranaense as well. My worry for the two Brazilian clubs here is that they're going to go into this second leg in the lead and just sit in the back foot, and neither of them are good enough to hold off their opposition for 90
but
minutes.
But neither of them also, Austin, were, you know, as you said, they're just not good enough. You know, there were home performances. And they were the second best team. I think Millonarios, well, you know, we'll come to that in a moment, but both those clubs were the second best on the night and both got fortuitous results.
They did, yeah. And the thing with Botafogo is they were in a position 2-0 up at halftime that if you consolidate that and if you get another goal, then it might not even matter because you're 3-0 up going into a road leg and then you can actually sit back and defend it. But just one goal up against two dangerous sides, you know, in Colo-Colo and Millonarios, I think both the Brazilian teams are really in trouble here, which is tough to say because I spent last week's pod praising all the Brazilian sides in this competition. I think that will still prove to be true once the big hitters come in. But for these two sides, and we'll get into Paranaense in a bit, I was worried by what I saw, and especially with Botafogo. They were probably fortunate to win 2-1, and I'm 100% with Adam on this one. I think Colo-Colo are favored in the second leg, and I think they'll probably come out best for it and take it and advance on.
But I wasn't impressed with the refereeing either in this game. I thought he was very lenient towards Botafogo with some of the challenges earlier on, even taking away the usual kind of leniency in Libertadores action. But that penalty at the end as well could prove very costly. I think that should have been a penalty. His hand wasn't in a natural position for me. And I'm pretty sure he meant to handle the ball. Botafogo were very fortunate to get away with that. And I hope that that doesn't cost Colo-Colo in the second leg. I think my only worry for the second leg is considering how attacking Colo-Colo like to play under Guardi, that they might get caught on the counter-attack. And Colo-Colo only have that one away goal. They should have got more. And we'll probably discuss this in a minute, but I've said to Austin already on Twitter that I have a funny feeling that we might get penalties in either one of these games or maybe both.
I don't know. Now, Simon, I want to bring you on this one. Did you see this one? And, you know, as a neutral, maybe, what were your thoughts?
I saw bits and pieces of the Botafogo game. I watched the Millonarios game a lot closer. I agree with a lot of what's been said. The atmosphere was really intense. It was an interesting game. And yeah, I do think Colo-Colo were a bit unlucky. Obviously, Botafogo have some quality. They did show that. But it will be a very interesting game to watch the second leg. It's one of those that's really set up nicely for an interesting game away. So yeah, looking forward to the second leg.
Yeah, indeed. And I'll stick with you because the next game up is Atletico Paranaense against Millonarios off Colombia. For me, it's a dubious penalty. For me, it's a legal shoulder charge. I thought it was bloody harsh. Millonarios were as I said to Austin there, they were the better team. They deserve something out of this. But maybe the lack of the away goal could cost them. You know, obviously, you follow them a little bit closer probably than the rest of us. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, Millonarios have made a lot of changes. They've kind of stagnated over the last two or three years. They've had the same players. They've had good quality players. But the manager's really made a lot of changes in terms of bringing in more directness, more pace, a bit more energy, a lot of younger, hungry players. And I think the team they set up, again, they have new creative players that they haven't rushed in. Guys like Alexis Zapata, who's joined from, he was playing in Italy. So he was with Udinese. So he's come back. They've signed Cristian Aranjo from Envigado. He's now in the squad. He was on the bench. So they in terms of the players they brought straight in, Juan Dominguez and John Duque, Alessio Quiñones, they're players who have real directness and pace. And I think that they played some nice football, some nice direct passing. With the penalty, yeah, I think my first reaction was it was a silly challenge in terms of going in so quickly. And so he didn't seem to have so much control. But the more you looked at it, you said, oh, he's got a bit of the ball there and maybe it's not as bad as it first looks. I think it was a risky challenge to make at that point in the box. But again, it was perhaps a little bit harsh. I could definitely see what you mean. So I think in terms of the second leg, I think Millonarios have a good chance. As I said, they have a lot of creative, interesting, more nuanced players. They definitely set up in this first leg to have pace and to counter and to be able to move the ball quickly. Whereas I think in Bogota, they have a decision to make. They can keep with this kind of direct football, this kind of quick passing wing play, or they can look to bring in some of these more creative, nuanced players they have available now, including also the Venezuelan international, Cufate, who played for Venezuela in the last round of World Cup qualifiers. He's a number 10 they could bring in. So they have a lot of options that they can bring in. But yeah, I agree. I think they played very well, and I think they were unlucky to come away from this game losing by that one penalty.
Simon, what kind of a reception will Paranesi get when they arrive in Colombia? Is this I'm not very familiar with them. What kind of a crowd do they have? Is it a typically South American warm welcome they can expect?
Yeah, obviously Millonarios are one of the two or three biggest teams in Colombia. They'll definitely sell out the stadium. There will be a good atmosphere. Millonarios again have underachieved a little bit in the last few years, given their resources, given the size of the club. So I think the fans are very excited to have this new crop of interesting players. And personally, for me, I'd really like to see them progress because I'd like to see what they do. I think in this initial game, they played really well. But I think there's a lot more to come in terms of, as I say, some of these new players they have available to them. I don't think they wanted to throw them all in straight away. But with some more league games, I think the team can really grow into something interesting. Whereas in previous years, Millonarios, they have the kind of team that's set up to be contenders, but never really thrill or never really excite. Whereas I think now they have some interesting players, and if they can make everything click and work, I think they'll do well. So yeah, it should be a good atmosphere in Bogota. I imagine it'll be a sellout. It's a big stadium up there. So yeah, it should be a good atmosphere. And I think Millonarios are in a good position. If they can get everything right in terms of tactics, in terms of getting the balance right, ensuring that they can keep guys like Graffiti up front quiet, I think they should look at this game as an opportunity to progress in the tournament.
No, indeed. And Austin, for you, Paranesi, bar the penalty, they didn't really threaten that much. They were quite toothless and just very fortunate is the best way I can describe it, Austin.
Yeah, I think they were. And I think this is, and even the both of Fogota are perfect illustrations for why this two-leg format is absolutely the way to go. Because you could get lucky over one match, but it kind of feels like both of those sides are going to get found out over the second. Paranaense were not terribly impressive as far as creating chances. They got a penalty that, you know, maybe not, probably not. But as Simon said, it's a challenge that maybe just shouldn't be made at that portion. Give Grafich credit, still kicking along here, even in his old age.
105 and counting.
But the thing about Grafich, and we saw this last year with Santa Cruz, is he would have these stretches where he would just disappear. And for the middle portion of the season, the part that got Santa Cruz relegated, he didn't do anything. He got started hot and put a couple goals past at the end. But in the middle, he did nothing. And I think that's the worry for Paranaense going forward is, you know, what are they going to have? And they've had, you know, they played on an artificial pitch and they weren't really able to open up too much of an advantage. Yes, they didn't concede an away goal, but they only put one past Millonarios. So that, you know, that means they're one away. They weren't all that impressive to me, and neither of the Brazilian sides were. And I think the thing that is maybe the biggest issue for Paranaense is I don't know that they scare me as much on the counterattack. And going into a raucous environment, you know, against a team like Millonarios, that, as Simon said, you know, the environment is going to be there, I think Paranaense are going to naturally just sit back and try to defend. And I don't think they're going to be able to defend their way through this tie. I just simply don't think they're good enough to do that, nor are they dangerous enough on the counter to do that and then counter and grab an away goal and then, you know, force Millonarios to have to score three. So I think Millonarios are also favored here going forward, and that would be tough for both of these Brazilian sides, you know, to fall out at this stage of the competition, of this stage of the preliminary rounds. But I think that's very likely. One thing to note, as Adam said, you know, maybe penalties in play for both of these ties. Waverton, Atlético Paranaense's goalkeeper, a very, very good penalty stopper. That's the reason he was picked for the Olympic team this summer in August. He's got a reputation. He's a very good penalty stopper. So if this tie does go to penalties, something to keep in the back of your head, something to keep an eye on. He's got a reputation, could be a difference down the stretch, could get Paranaense through on penalties.
Well, my goodness, you're praising a South American goalkeeper, I imagine. But listen, Austin, like, on a serious note, do you think, you know, in recent years, the Brazilian contingent coming into this tournament have underwhelmed immensely? And here we are, you know, we're really at the first stage where we have the Brazilian clubs come in. And again, we're talking about two exits. Is this something we're going to see as, you know, when we hit the group stage? is there that much of a gap these days?
I don't know if there's that much of a gap or not, but I would not read too much into these two teams bowing out at this stage if that is what happens. I think these two are Shop at Coincy accepted, and obviously that's a completely different circumstance. The weakest.
We don't even know what to expect from them at all. They don't know what to expect from themselves.
The weakest of the Brazilian contingent. I think you look at teams like Palmeiras, like Atlético Mineiro, like Grêmio, Santos, and even Flamengo. I think those teams are on a significantly higher level than Paranaense and Botafogo. Both of these teams were probably fortunate that all of a sudden, you know, halfway through the last season, CONMEBOL said, hey, here's more spots for Brazil. And they were the beneficiaries of that. There was a pretty big gap between the top four in Brazil and the teams that came after it. Grêmio obviously weren't in that top four, but that was more of a managerial situation. I think
they're a useful side. I think they have a pedigree.
I think they have a lot of talent there. But the gap between fourth place and fifth place last year was pretty significant. And I think that is going, I think Brazilian clubs will be successful. These two might be the exception to that.
Grêmio qualified via the Brazilian Cup, though.
Yes. Right? Yes. And that's a type of situation where you get going in that. And down the stretch, you sometimes put the pedal off in the league and you're saving players for that. And I think that was a bit of what happened to Grêmio down the stretch. They disappointed for certain at points last year, but I think they're more talented than their league positioning last year suggested.
I think Colo-Colo are in a better position going into the second leg than Millonarios, simply because they've got that away goal. If Paranaense score in Colombia, yeah, it's going to be a long way back for Millonarios, especially if the Brazilians score first. So
they couldn't score from open play at home, Adam. I just don't see that as a...
It's difficult. You only need one.
And that's on a plastic pitch as well. You know, they're going to be playing on grass this time as well. I see them getting completely dicked.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Well, listen, let's move it on to a team, in the last phase, who entertained me greatly. But I was always very wary of their defense, and it came back to haunt them again. Montevideo Wanderers against the strongest, who came out 2-0 winners away from home. And going back to La Paz, to the altitude, like, I just don't even see a ray of hope or a ray of sunshine for Wanderers. Who wants to take this one first?
Yeah, Dave, as you said, Wanderers got through in the last round against a different Bolivian team, 7-5 on aggregate over the two legs. So, you know, they were not afraid to concede goals. They continued that up here in this matchup. Wanderers made one change from their lineup in that second leg against Sucre, and it was their poor goalkeeper, the 20-year-old.
Hardly surprising.
and the sad thing is this poor kid, he's 20. Making his first professional start, and, you know, he looked very much like he was 20 and making his first professional start. They pulled him for Martin Rodriguez, a 27-year-old kind of journeyman, who I suppose was, I don't know, he was fine, whatever. But the strongest were the better side here, and that's never, ever something you say about a Bolivian team on the road. But Chumacero got them started early. Matias Alonso scored late, and the strongest are, as you said, they've got a foot and a half into the next round because of this performance. Really hard to see a way back for Montevideo Wanderers at altitude in La Paz against the strongest, who, as far as Bolivian teams go, are a pretty good representation for Bolivia. You know, personally, I want to see the strongest get to the group stage because I think they just make the competition more fun. I love having to watch teams go to La Paz. I think it adds for incredible excitement. And seeing them continue to go on would be great. I thought they looked very strong in this leg, you know, again, against weakened competition, perhaps. But I thought Chumacero was good. I thought his goal was well taken. I thought Alonso put himself in the right position for the second. You know, Pablo Escobar, always entertaining to watch. And I think the strongest could pose some problems for some teams going forward. You know, last year, they got the road win against São Paulo. They fell just short of getting out of the group when they drew 1-1. With São Paulo. So someone to keep an eye on. You know, you always have an eye on them because of the altitude. But I think they could be a bogey team for a couple sides. And I wouldn't be stunned if they got to the group to see them then go and get out of the group. But this was a fun match. Wanderers, I don't think they have any hope of getting back into it in the second leg. So congratulations to the Strongest for taking advantage of that.
Yeah, the Strongest were really fun to watch, I thought, in this. And it was such a unique experience to see kind of a Bolivian side dominate away from home. That was probably kind of the most fun thing I took from this, really. But it does show that maybe the Strongest have really improved a lot, or maybe it shows that the rest of South America's got weaker, because between 1965 and 2015, they only had 2 victories away from home in 55 matches. And in their last 4 away matches now, they've now got 2 victories. Some of you may remember that last year they managed to beat Sao Paulo in Brazil in the group stage. They were unfortunate to go out in the group stages in the end. They are a side managed by Cesar Farias, who was the man who moved the Venezuelan national team really to the next level a few years ago. They had a strong showing in the 2011 Copa America, where they got to the semi-finals of that against the odds. And they followed that up with their best ever World Cup qualifying campaign. They ran out of steam towards the end of that, but they should have made it. And he went on to manage various sides after that. And he's ended up at the Strongest in Bolivia. And he managed to win the title at the end of last year with them, which looked very unlikely heading into the last couple of weeks. But they managed to turn it around, and they forced a playoff against their big rivals in La Paz, Bolivar. And they managed to win that playoff final and win the Bolivian championship. So they came into this tournament kind of full of confidence, really. And I think that they've really got a solid side there. And I think it's going to be a tough ask for Unión Española, who they'll probably face in the next round, unless Cerro come back in that one. I think that's going to be a really interesting tie to watch. It was a fantastic performance from Chuma Cerro, who Austin mentioned. You know, he scored and assisted in this one. He's actually scored 3 years in a row now in the Copa Libertadores. And the Bolivian international, you know, he's one of those players who are a bit under the radar, but often impresses me when I see him. I think maybe he could do well outside of Bolivian football, but he's getting on now.
No, I totally agree with that, with Austin. It's without the Strongest in the group, it's just not the same. It's just not Copa Libertadores. Simon, yourself, did you see this one? What were your thoughts? Okay, so we will move on to the next game, which probably is one of the craziest goals I've seen in a very, very long time, decided this one. And it's Independiente del Valle. There we go.
Another year of it. Another year.
Yeah, here we go. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoop, whoop. So they won 1-0 against Olimpia. They're doing just enough to get through these ties. And I'm just really excited by Gabriel Cortés. He's the one player that's standing out for me so far out of all the ties and all the football I've watched in Libertadores so far. The hairstyle alone sets him aside, but there's a player in there as well. I'm enjoying watching them. Simon, yourself, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, it was actually a game I enjoyed. I saw some of the comments on Twitter saying, it was a bit of a boring game. But for me, I quite like the balance and the contrast between the two different teams. Olimpia had quality. They were kind of a typical big side within their country, goes to Libertadores, used to controlling games, playing good football, good technical, solid players with experience, whereas Independiente del Valle, again, they had a bit of the same as we saw last year in terms of players playing with a bit more freedom, a bit more creativity, a bit more pace. As you say with Cortés, he was a player who caught my eye as well. He's a player who has very good confidence, comes inside with a lot of poise, a lot of balance, you know, very creative player that I really liked. I enjoyed the game. Obviously, yeah, the goal was a bit of a mess. It was a cross, bounced around, defender swung and kind of sliced it, and then it broke free. Strike had a shot, again, another deflection and went in. But especially towards the second half, I enjoyed the game. Olimpia trying to get the goal and you know, working some good football, keeping the ball fairly well, looking solid. Whereas Independiente del Valle had a bit more creativity, a bit more freedom to their play in the counterattacks and in, you know, moving the ball around. So for me, it was a good, typical South American kind of game where you get one team that has the sound technique, the sound balance and tactics in the side in Olympia against a team that's a bit more out there, a bit less structured, but with some good, you know, some good creativity and some good freedom in their play. So a game I enjoyed, and yeah, I think obviously a good win for Independiente del Valle. Again, it's still in the balance. It'll be difficult going to Olympia to try and get that to finish the job in the second leg. But again, it's an enjoyable team to watch again in this year's Libertadores, and I hope they continue. Obviously, Olympia's a big side. It'd be good to have them in the tournament as well. But yeah, I like Independiente del Valle, and I think nice to see more of Cortez and his half black, half gold hairstyle, which is interesting as well.
Looks like a pint of Guinness, to be honest with you, if I'm honest, but that's just me and drink. Austin, tell us this. You know, you loved telling us last year every time about IDV and how they got there. Surely they can't fall at a qualifying stage. They get the rub of the green, too much of it. You know, we saw it in the last round, the last kick of the game. They managed to get back into the game and go through. It's inconceivable. They can't go out, can they, Austin?
It sure doesn't feel like it. It would be kind of a letdown after the way they got through the first phase. They were really the only team from that first phase that gave a good account of themselves. Montevideo Wanderers got yet blasted by the strongest at home. Capiatá had moments against Universitario but lost 3-1. So they might be the last hope for teams from that stage. They just do just enough to do exactly what they need. I didn't find this game as entertaining as Simon may have. I felt like it was lacking in chances. The goal was off of a deflection, and that was about it. It certainly had the storylines, and maybe that just means it's getting set up for a really good second leg. Of course, you know, Ascona, the goalkeeper for Olympia, was the goalkeeper for Del Valle last year. Jonathan Gonzalez, another former Del Valle player, and of course, the Olympia manager, Repeto, was Del Valle's manager last year. So there were plenty of storylines to go in this game. I think this is set up for a really good second leg. After a bit of a disappointing first leg, Del Valle did well. They didn't give up an away goal, and they have an advantage. I don't think they're the type of team that will try to sit back and play to that advantage. They're not going to try to take this 0-0 for 90 minutes. I don't think they'd be successful if they tried to do that anyway. And so I'm very curious to watch this second leg. I'm excited for it as I was excited for the first leg. I agreed with both of you all on Cortez. I think he's a very talented player. Seems like he's just another one in that line of really talented players for Independiente del Valle. And the hair just kind of makes it all for me, you know. He's got the hairstyle to match it too. So I think it's all poised for a really good second leg after a first leg that I found to be a bit disappointing.
I hear Jesse will be proud of us for us talking about hair so much. Adam, for you, surely this going into it, you know, with the 1-0 and the stature of the teams, this is going to be the tie of the second leg rounds, really. This one could go either way. Olympia are no mugs.
Yeah, I didn't see too much of this. I did start off watching it. It was on at the same time as the Universitario Capiatá. I only really had half an eye on channel flicking a little bit. One of the other things which put me off watching this is that I was a little bit disappointed that Independiente del Valle have got rid of their massive advertising ball behind the goal, which used to say future champion of Ecuador. They've changed it to another slogan, nowhere near as good. That was a little bit upsetting, as that was one of my favourite things from the early rounds last year. The game didn't really live up to my hopes. If Colo Colo get through against Botafogo, which is obviously a little bit up in the air, like we said earlier, I'd be confident that they could beat either of these sides on this evidence. As for the second leg, I kind of fancy IDV to finish the job off. A bit similar to my reason earlier, I think not conceding an away goal in the first leg, I think is very useful going into the second leg. And as we've seen in previous years, that IDV certainly are quite dangerous on the counter attack, and this side looks no different, judging by their performances in the first phase as well. So yeah, I fancy IDV to sneak through actually, and Olympia will be very disappointed if that does happen, as they've invested in their squad and that they would have hoped to have gone far in this Libertadores. But this was always like a tough game to get, and that kind of foursome of Colo-Colo, Botafogo, Independiente del Valle, and Olimpia, you know, to pick one team from that four when I feel that most of the other draw is a lot weaker, it seems quite harsh. So, yeah, I don't know what the guys think about that.
Yeah, I said last week that I felt that this four was kind of all four really had hopes that they were going to make the group stage, and all four might have even had expectations that they were going to make the group stage. And I think you're spot on in pointing out, you know, another foursome of Junior Carabobo, Tucumán El Nacional. Another one is Paranaense, Millonarios, Universitario, Capiatá. It's absolutely clear that this is the strongest of the kind of four groups where one is going to make it out into the group stage. And it's a bit harsh on some of these clubs. You know, one of Colo-Colo, Del Valle, Olimpia, and Botafogo is going to make the group stage. The other three are going to fall short, and it's going to be at least in some sense a disappointment. So I think it's a really difficult draw for these sides.
Well, listen, let's move into the final game of the round, and that's Capita against Universitario. Adam, your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so I didn't start off by watching this, but I flicked over about 2-3 minutes in, and I was surprised at the pace of the game. It was really sort of an end-to-end match, and both teams had lots of chances. Neither side could defend very well. Even before the opening goal, which came fairly early on in the match, both sides had good chances to open the scoring. But it did feel like there wasn't too much surprise when Universitario took the lead. They took the lead through the winger, Alexi Gomez, who was on fire for them in the night. So much so, I had to double check that it was the same one that was playing in Chile last year for San Luis. He looked a lot more talented player, but maybe that was something to do with the opposition that he came up against. I think over the 90 minutes, Capiatá will rue the amount of missed chances that they had. They're pretty much on the brink of an exit from the competition, you know, losing your home leg 3-1. Very difficult to come back from that. You know, the minimum you can hope for maybe is maybe 3-1 in the second leg and force a penalty shootout. It would be very difficult to even win by 3 clear goals. Yeah, the only positive for Capiatá I had is that, yeah, they look promising going forward at times, but, you know, just at the back. They do have a lovely little stadium there, actually. I asked Ralph Hanna, one of the Paraguayan experts that we've sometimes had on this pod, and he told me that they're a really well-run club in Paraguay, you know. They don't go beyond, they don't live beyond their means or anything like that. So I respect for the club. They look like a really well run, but I think money that Universitario have invested in their squad for this Libertadores looks like it's paid off here, there, and they're in a kinder part of the draw than the teams we've already mentioned. So yeah, I think the Peruvians are looking good, not just for this round, but maybe to get into the group stages.
That's cool. And yourself, Simon, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, I mean, as I say, I was watching the other game as well. But I came in towards the second half and obviously things were looking exciting. Yeah, I think Capiatá were pushing for the equaliser. They were desperate to draw the game level. They were 2-1 down. They were really pressing. And then Universitario showed their quality and broke away and scored the third goal. And I think that was decisive. And even after that, going up 3-1, Capiatá again looked fairly dangerous in attack, but were wide open in at the back. So I think that's one of the key issues for them. You would think the tie is over. I can't imagine them keeping a clean sheet in the next game, which is something they really need to do. So yeah, Universitario, I think, showed their experience, showed their quality, and they got a very good win. And yeah, as I say, I think they may make it through to the group stage. They look good.
And Austin, did you pick this one up, or are you like me? I just was bought all in and watching Cortez because I just enjoyed him so much the last few weeks.
Universitario, I thought, were definitely the better side. I think there's definitely, you know, weaknesses at the back that will probably show up later on in the competition. They didn't go up against a side that could really exploit those, I think. And, you know, Capiatá themselves didn't have much in the way of a defense, and that allowed Universitario to take this 3-1. I think even if this tie were sitting at 2-1, you know, you'd feel better about it if you're Capiatá, but that third goal was just a backbreaker, and it came, you know, in that typical counterattacking situation. I thought Meniseto played well for Universitario. I was impressed by him. The two Panamanians who came off the bench, Quintero and Tejada, I was also impressed with both of them. I think this is an interesting Universitario side going forward. You know, Adam mentioned the kindness of the portion of the draw they're in. You know, they could absolutely be in the group stage, and I think they'd be a really interesting team to watch in that. So I certainly think there are some talented pieces. I don't know that the defense is good enough to have them make an actual run in this competition, but because of their talented attacking and that weak defense, they'll at least add to the entertainment, which is never a negative thing. So Universitario should be able to run away with this second leg, and that would set them up against either Milonarios or Paranaense in the third round for that spot in the group stage. And I think that either one of those would be really interesting matchups.
No, without a doubt, there's a lot of decent football to come and some very well set up legs there. But before we move into Chile and Colombia, quickly, Austin, I got a question in and around the Drogba situation and Corinthians. Can you tell us anything more about that?
So it is not going to happen for certain. Off Corinthians' marketing department had inquired, you know, would Didier Drogba be interested in coming and playing a year for Corinthians? They did this without the knowledge of the Corinthians football department, who were initially pretty certain against the idea of signing Drogba. The man in the middle was, of course, their president, Roberto Di Andraghi. He came out in support of it, eventually kind of swung the football side to it. So they kind of went guns blazing into this. Then a copy of the offer actually leaked to the press. Firstly, it wasn't written in the best of English. And secondly, I think Drogba was fairly upset that it had leaked. It didn't exactly portray him in a great light. Corinthians offered an armored car, 6 flights from Brazil to Europe, a translator, etc. Drogba eventually said thanks but no thanks after a pretty long and drawn out transfer process kind of saga here. I think Corinthians are probably better off not having signed him. The price was going to be immense. They're not in the Libertadores. I don't think even with him, they would have been really challenges for the title. So it really would have been a marketing move, and I think it just would have been too much money to really make that happen. So I think it's probably better off for Chimon that this didn't happen, but that's kind of the details on that. One other thing, big name to keep an eye on in Brazil, Ronaldinho, the former star, now, you know, kind of trots around the midfield in a friendly every once in a while. Has been contacted by Curitiba. Supposedly there was supposed to be a decision to that today. That didn't happen. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. I'm excited by the prospect of it because it would probably finally mean that Curitiba would get themselves relegated, which I've been hoping would happen for about 3 years now because they just bore me. Signing Ronaldinho to your midfield when you're a lesser tier side is probably a great way to secure that. So keep an eye on. Maybe Ronaldinho will come out. It would surely be after Carnival, probably until May before we'd even be in shape enough to even think about playing. But maybe that would happen for Curitiba and would be, I don't know, an added bit of entertainment in the Brazilian league. So those are kind of the...
You can never class that as entertainment, yeah. Austin, sorry. You know, that was a magnificent, magnificent footballer, and to see him lumbering and laboring about...
It was watching him for Fluminense in 2015.
I want to remember him as he was, not that pale shadow.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he should just give it up. It's not about money or anything. And it's just gone for the kid. Like, it's gone. No. I just give it up. Please, no. Ronaldinho, just give it up. Listen, I'll swing across to Adam. And Adam, what is happening with the start of the Chilean league?
Well, not much at the moment, but it starts this weekend. It was meant to start Friday night, but those two matches were cancelled, mainly because of the wildfires, which are still raging in the south of Chile. So they haven't got enough resources to put the games on. Most of the matches taking place this weekend are in the north or in the capital. So we've got 6 out of the 8 fixtures of the calendar. And I believe that, before I move on to ask Simon his opinion of the Colombian season coming up, I'd just like to point out that the two Libertadores teams, Colo-Colo and Unión Española, actually play each other this weekend. So it'd be interesting to see what sides both of them field. I've got a feeling that Colo-Colo will field a weakened side with that Botafogo second leg in mind. Simon, Colombian League starting this weekend as well?
The Colombian League's actually just started this evening. The first game's finished. Pasto won 4-0 away at Cortuluá, which is a surprise result. It's going to be interesting. The biggest news in terms of Colombian League football is América de Cali are back in the top flight. All the talk of Ronaldinho, he's one of the players who was offered to América de Cali alongside Berbatov and all kinds of players. Forlan was one of them as well. The coach has decided against a high-profile signing. Obviously, many people thought they might do that back in the top division, signal of intent. Their biggest signing was Santiago Silva, who's a Uruguayan striker, has done well last couple of years. Interesting to see how they do. Atlético Nacional obviously have kept hold of most of their good players. Alejandro Guerra has gone to Brazil, but they've also signed Dairo Moreno, Colombian international, Edwin Valencia. They've got a good team for this year. So it's going to be interesting. The Colombian League is looking really strong. Independiente Medellin as well have an excellent team for the Libertadores. They've signed Juan Fernando Quintero. We'll see if he finally comes and shows his full potential. He's an incredibly talented number 10, playing alongside Marugo and Mal Molina. It's going to be an excellent team to watch Medellin this year. My team, Envigado, we'll see they're up against Deportivo Cali this weekend. We've just signed Jefferson Duque, who was great for Nacional, struggled a bit in Mexico. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Tigres also making their first game in the Colombian top division. They're the size of a conference team in England. Actually, they're much smaller than a conference team in England. No fans, no money, no supporters. They've signed Wilson Carpintero, who just moves around the smallest teams in Colombia. They're pretty bad. We'll see how it goes. It's going to be interesting. So, yeah, looking forward to the league starting this week in Colombia. Lots of interesting signings, some big name signings in Colombia. And it's going to be interesting. Colombian League's getting better, and I think the Libertadores representatives from Colombia should do quite well this year.
Let's hope so. As long as we get some entertainment like Atlético Nacional last season, God, I'm all for that. But listen, we've rambled on, and it's nearly 2 a.m.
No questions about the State Leagues? State Leagues started in Brazil.
Austin, and to finish up the podcast, Austin, we're finishing. Like, you know.
No.
I go and paint a wall and watch it dry and be more interested. No, thank you.
It was said sarcastically.
Well, it didn't sound it. Right, okay.
We can't go with Austin, that's the problem.
Austin, I love your enthusiasm and the fact that you even waste your time and energy watching that. I applaud you. I commend you for it, but seriously, not in this podcast today. Listen, I'll run around the table, start with you, Austin. Where can we find you on Twitter? What are you up to? Anything you'd like to plug?
I am at Austin_James906 on Twitter. A lot of Libertadores action coming up. Brazilian state leagues are rumbling along. I will probably subject myself to at least some of that, sadly. Nothing better to do on the weekends. But yeah, follow me on Twitter. Plenty of Libertadores. Excited to be in full swing with that. Having all the matches Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It was wonderful this week, and we'll run it back next week.
Indeed we will, and we will not be mentioning the Brazilian state leagues ever again. ever again. They don't exist. Adam, yourself, where can we find you on Twitter? What are you up to? Fire away.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Kanija Scores. There you can find me tweet about, you know, South American football on a regular basis, especially Libertadores and Chile national team. One bit of news today that it looks like Chile will keep those 3 points they got from Bolivia in World Cup qualifying after, you know, they'd originally drawn the game 0-0, Bolivia fielding an ineligible player, and Chile won the case with FIFA, so they get the 3 points and they stay in fourth position in the South American qualifying competition. I've also tweeted this week about the Copa Sudamericana draw, which took place this week. So check my Twitter feed for the fixtures in that. Corinthians against Universidad de Chile. It looks quite an appetizing tie. And I was also on 11 Pieces of Me this week. So I think that will be coming out a similar time to this podcast. So if you haven't listened to it already, then check that out. My 11 favorite players, or the 11 players which mean the most to me. Maybe we can phrase it at that, who have retired.
Yep, it'll be out just very shortly after this one. This one's on the list before it. So this should be out Saturday, so 11 Piece of Me Wadham will be out on Sunday. Simon, yourself, where can we find you on Twitter? Anything you're working on, plug away.
Yes, I'm on Twitter at Simon Edwards SAF. Just tweeting, looking forward to the Colombian League, as I say, over this weekend. The Sudamericana, I think Deportivo Cali, I want to watch. They've got an excellent team. Shame about Mario Yepes, their manager. Oh, he's such a good player, but such a rubbish manager and has terrible suits. Just Google his suits. They're awful. But that aside, yeah, be on Twitter talking about Colombian football. And yeah, come follow me. Let me know. Tell me if you have any questions. Tell me I'm talking rubbish. All welcome.
Indeed. And just before we close, I think I'd be remiss of us not to mention our dear friend Dylan Baker, who appears, Austin, to have been caught up in the Bowling Green, Kentucky massacre.
That appears to be the case here from the States this week. Google it if you have any questions.
R.I.P. Dylan.
And you can tell from our laughter that it's not very serious. But give that a Google. Give yourself a laugh. And poor old Dylan. He's going to be a daddy very soon, so his problems might. So, listen, just thank you very, very much for your time, guys, as always. We'll be back to do it all again next week and see which way these ties pan out. There's a few of them very, very nicely balanced. From my own point of view, just plug WFI. We'll certainly give you a lot of coverage of the Copa Libertadores as well. Check out the rest of the pods. They're all there. And, you know, a full week of pods coming up as well the following week. So just from me, thank you again for listening. Until the next time, it's goodbye.